is hard. Everything's bad and it's getting worse, but not in my backyard.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Not In My Backyard. I'm Cody Lindquist.
I'm Charlie Todd. How's everybody doing tonight?
It's such a beautiful day
it's
out.
Spring. It was 72 degrees. My goodness. But it is fake spring number two. It's going to be 31 Saturday morning. I'm sorry.
I keep putting my coat away. It's my fault to keep putting my coat away.
This show is not in my backyard. This is the show where we debate all of the local issues that are causing drama in neighborhood Facebook groups all over the city.
We read Facebook, so you don't have to.
That's right. We've got a really great panel today.
We just start. So we are a married couple. We say that because we will talk about... our lives.
Our private lives.
This show is just, we're really going to go deep dive into our private life.
I am a public member of Manhattan Community Board 4's Transportation Committee, but my views tonight do not necessarily express the views of Community Board 4.
Yes, and I am a member of the Community Education Council for District 2, Public Schools, and Manhattan, and my views tonight do not necessarily represent the views of CEC D2.
And we're also comedians. We met here at the UCB Theater 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
To age us a little bit.
They're like, these old people. That's so cute. Love.
But we're going to bring out a great panel today and talk about all of the issues that are in the news. But first, we like to quiz our audience because we have a very smart audience.
You guys are so smart. Every month, I'm shocked.
So we're going to do a pop quiz first. You can raise your hand or shout out the answer to this first one. Okay, first question. How many pounds of waste does New York City's Department of Sanitation collect every day? Shout out an answer.
A million.
25 tons. 20 million.
Okay.
10 million.
2.5 million.
I'm going to give it to 20 million. Correct answer, 24 million.
24 million. Guys, what are we doing? We're halfway to that Wall-E movie. We're halfway on the ship.
If you add in the 20 million pounds generated by businesses and 33 million generated from construction and demolition, that's 77 million pounds. So that's a lot. Okay, here's another question about...
That's so upsetting. Every single day.
I mean, unless I wrote the question wrong, it says here every day. New York State police are in search of 60,000 pounds of walnuts that were stolen off trucks in Hunts Point in the Bronx. Question for you, the audience. What is the approximate retail value of 60,000 pounds of shelled walnuts?
Where are my nutheads at? Any nutheads in the audience?
Someone said $5
million.
$5 million. $40
million.
$16 million. $16 million. 20,000.
Big spread.
What was that?
$250K.
I'm gonna give it to $20,000. The correct answer, 60,000. I'm sorry, the correct answer is 50,000.
50,000.
60,000 pounds of shelled walnuts.
I was trying to do the math in my head because I do love a walnut, and it's $7.50 for the walnut pieces bag at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, there you go.
But I couldn't do that advanced level math.
Okay, we have one more question. And there is a prize for this one. It's a head-to-head competition. And I'm going to give you the question, and you can decide if you want to come up on stage and challenge someone else. The question is, how many New York City council members can you name?
Now, you might win this. You might win this with two.
If you know two, you might win.
You might win it with three.
You only have to know more than someone else. So with that in mind, who thinks they could name a couple of
New
York City
council
members?
Come on, be brave. And we won't make fun of you. Anyone? We will not make fun of you.
Anyone right here? Come on up.
Yes, come on up.
Come on up.
Right.
Come on, you can't let him go alone. What's your name?
We need another challenger.
Omar, all right, wonderful. Come on, someone, don't leave Omar hanging.
Who else?
If you have one, Omar might not know any. We don't know.
I'm not 100% confident.
Tony, come on downstage, yeah. All right,
come
great.
On.
Our house manager, Tony, jumping in. He's not going to like the prize. You'll like the prize. What was your name again? Omar?
Yep.
Omar, what neighborhood do you live in?
Bed-Stuy.
Okay, don't tell us your council member yet. I hope you know them, but don't tell us that yet.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to let Omar start, and the rules is just back and forth, so you name one.
All right, Omar, you go first.
Che.
Che,
okay.
Does mispronunciation affect me?
No.
Noel, be generous.
Eric Bochner, the guy. He's really
Eric Botcher.
Botcher, that's the one I meant. He's really into cleaning.
Eric Botcher has been a guest on our show before. He was our council member, but he currently is our state senator because...
But I will say he's our state senator, but we currently do not have a council member, so let's let it slide because we don't have a new one yet.
Okay, we'll let it slide.
Okay, no, okay.
I contest that.
can you name one more?
Wait, hold on. We're not just going to let it slide. You have to name one.
I was going, oh, I didn't have one besides him.
All right, we got to give it to Omar. How many can you name one for the win?
The other Adams.
The yes! Other
Adams.
Adrian Adams. Oh, wait, is she gone now?
No, I'm sorry. She's no longer in the cast. But you said one. We're giving it to you.
Omar, you win.
And, Omar, the prize is you can get free tickets to our next show. Just follow us on Instagram and DM us. Our Instagram is @NIMBY_show.
And just a shout out, if you live in Eric Botcher's former council seat, there's a special election coming up April 28th. So we highly recommend you go out and vote for that.
That's right. Mark your calendars for our next show, Thursday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. right here at UCB Theater. And follow us on Instagram @NIMBY_show for details on it. We have Katie Honan from the city
yes,
is going to be on our show
excited.
Next month.
She's returning champion.
Great. Yeah.
I'm just looking at these names. I think most of these names you made up.
Nope, they're all real. Gail Brewer, come on, guys. Gail Brewer.
Well, Gail Brewer.
Also, special heads up, we have a transportation special happening on Thursday, May 28th with Betsy Plum from the Riders Alliance and more. Okay, are you guys ready to meet our panel?
It's a great panel.
He is a writer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and the author of the book America, Let Me In. Please welcome Felipe Torres Medina.
She's a writer, editor at Hellgate, and a subscriber-funded, worker-owned news outlet dedicated to covering New York City. Welcome, Katie Way!
He's a comedian and improviser and the co-creator of the hit show The Power Joker, where he plays Robert Moses. Please welcome Sam Rogal!
All right, smart panel, can you all name your council members?
We were talking about this backstage.
We've decided as a group to abstain.
I support democracy, so
unless
it's kind of it'd be messed up if I didn't know. It's Phil Wong. Phil Wong
okay,
is my
wonderful. Okay, well then you
not yes, to brag. Yeah.
The journalist got it. The comedians not so much. Mm. Not so much. No, it's fine. It's fine. All right. Well, let's get started. Charlie, you want to ask the first question?
Yeah, sure. Welcome, guys. So the first question, I think, is the most pressing issue that's been in the news over the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's hard.
A tourist from Schimmerhof in Germany has sued popular taco chain Los Tacos Number 1 for not having a spicy warning on their green salsa. Reading from Gothamus, the man documented his alleged ailments in court filings, saying his tongue burned, his face turned red, and his heart rate soared. He said he suffered gastrointestinal distress and mouth sores that lasted for days. The Gothamist reporter tried the salsa for himself and said it was not that spicy, as did several other patrons that reporter interviewed. In a 12-page opinion, U.S. District Judge Dale Ho found there is no duty to warn a consumer of a spice-associated risk that come with consuming sauces. What does the panel think? Should we have spice warnings in restaurants in New York City?
Well, I heard that didn't smoke shoot out of his ears and his bow tie spun around? Didn't that also happen to him?
That did happen.
Yeah.
Because he is German, so he has to wear a bow tie by law.
And his suspenders went, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that I read this story when it happened, and the quote that is stuck in my brain is that the man responded to the heat saying, everything was hot, my heart, my soul, which is true. Everything was hot, my head, my soul, which I think is the name of a Eurovision song. Everything is hot, my head, my soul. So he got that out of this, so no warnings.
Also, 10 points, that German accent was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought Werner Herzog was here for a second. The same man has also sued Walmart because its New Jersey store wouldn't let him join the store Wi-Fi with an international number. And he sued the NYPD because a 911 operator said he couldn't call him back when he witnessed a crime due to his international number. So this seems to be a, someone who's
people
just looking
Americans
for lawsuits.
People say Americans are litigious. I mean, come on. Come on.
He loves to sue. Let him sue. He just wants to sue a little bit. That's fine.
Has anyone on stage had the salsa at Los Tacos number one?
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I mean, I guess I'm Hispanic, so maybe that makes it different, but it's fine. Like, I've never had... I don't think there's a single taco chain in New York that would have a sauce that requires a warning.
When I see the word salsa, I assume it's spicy. But that's me, a white person, so, you know.
That's true. I had it recently. I had it, like, last month, and it was not spicy. And I'm not, like, a spicy person. So it was fine for me. Oh, that was great.
I did try it for the first time before I knew about the lawsuit, and had I known someone else was grievously injured, yeah. I think I would have tried myself, you know, so next time.
All right, we want to talk about Mom Donnie for a little bit. Last month, he held a press conference alongside little children to raise awareness for the pre-K and 3K admissions process. What was interesting was that the mayor was literally doing improv comedy during the conference. He was yes-anding the little kids. And we know that he took improv class at the Magnet Theater, and he used to spend his Sundays watching improv shows at this theater, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, in the old location on 26th Street. So what does it mean to the comedians on the panel to have the first improviser mayor? What does it mean to be represented?
I mean, look, he embodies the millennial cringe that we all are, and I think that that's good. I think that for far too long, we have a gerontocracy in this country, so we need more leaders who represent, like, you know, I'm happy that we have both because Justice Jackson was in an improv team at Harvard, and...
Yes.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, Ketanji Supreme Brown Court Jackson. Justice.
Oh, I thought you were talking Andrew.
No. I thought you meant Stonewall.
Justice Ketanji Brown. I just think it's good that we have a mayor and a Supreme Court justice who know what Zip Zap Sop is. Oh. You know, and I think that's important.
That is an interesting point. Are we getting to the point where every single person in elected office will have taken an improv class? Yeah, just based demographically on age, right?
You guys aren't at those press conferences when he's doing red leather, yellow leather. You know, they don't show that. The media doesn't want you to know.
No,
he's warming up.
That's a theater deep cut. That's a that is a BFA deep cut.
Don't look at me.
He's like so many people I took improv classes with were like, his mom is kind of famous. You know, he does music on the side, but that's not his main thing. He kind of took a while to like find the job he wanted to do, you know, so it's pretty typical, I'd say.
But I do think, one, it is nice to be seen and to have a mayor who took improv classes and rides a city bike. I'm feeling very represented in City Hall. But I think just the skills of improv, of being able to just like be like talk like a real actual person and to like respond in the moment, I think like his communication skills are off the charts, and maybe his improv training had a little bit to do with that. I mean, I think he took one or two classes. But, you know, just this video, I don't know if you guys saw this video that came out today where he was talking about finding waste and, you know, finding money in the couch cushions of our government. And he filmed
so
this
funny.
Video where he's like actually like taking out dollar bills from the couches of Gracie Mansion. And like anyone else, like imagine de Blasio making a video like that. It would be so lame and cringe and terrible. And somehow Mom Donnie is able to do it with like just the right amount of detached irony, but also sincerity, and it works.
Okay, but can we, I voted for the, my first ever vote as an American.
Wow.
My first ever
Woo-hoo!
Vote as an American. Which is pretty cool. I was convinced that I was going to have to vote for Andrew Cuomo because like I thought Cuomo was going to win the primary and I couldn't vote in the primary.
You can write in anybody,
yeah.
By the way.
Well, I couldn't
time,
vote.
Yeah. Oh, true.
But then when I became a citizen recently and then I voted for Monday, I like the man. Can we admit the man has pretty privilege? Right? Like we let a lot slide.
Oh, because
like,
he's hot?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's like when you're on a date and they're like, that guy is so gross. But if he was hot, the same thing. You'd be like, yeah, I love him.
Yeah. If de Blasio was pulling out dollars, it's like that meme. We'd be like, hello, HR. Like, you know, we don't like this.
Well, de Blasio is tall.
He is tall.
No,
yeah,
a word in his defense. He is very tall.
Wait, how tall is Mom Donnie?
Normal.
Like normal.
Normal. Okay.
Normal.
He's like 5'10".
He stands on a thing. It just says normal.
Yeah. Normal
hyper. When I met him, when he did my show.
Rag.
Yeah, well, you know. So the term, like, light up a room gets thrown around a lot, very casually. And I will say, when he walked into the room, it, like, the energy palpably changed. Like, everyone was like...
And this was before he was elected.
Yes, yeah. This is before the primary. This was May of last year. But he was just, he has this, like, glow to him that is very, like, infectious. And let me say this, his hands, soft as pillows. His hands were like...
Where did he put his hands, Sam? Tell us
I shook it. I just shook it like a normal man. You know when two people meet and they shake hands?
Totally.
It was incredible. I was like, it was like going into his hand. It was incredible.
Wow. So he's got like memory foam hands.
Yeah, literally, yeah.
As the son of an academic and a filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly.
Soft hands.
He does light up a room, and someone who he's famously been charming is President of the United States, Donald Trump. Andrew, if we could get photo number one up. In between the State of the Union and the bombing of Iran, Mamdani got Trump to grin ear to ear and hold up a fake newspaper that read, Trump to city, let's build. What do you guys make of Mamdani's handling of Trump so far? Trump has called him both a communist and a nice guy recently.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Katie?
Not to objectify the mayor too much, but I do think we've seen, you know, Trump's cabinet, et cetera. This was the first time he'd been around a sexy guy in months and months, and he is acting accordingly.
Yeah, that's true. It's
yeah.
Like, yeah, the first time you are next to a hot dude at the gym, and you're like, wow.
I mean, much like New York City's press corps, it's just like Donald Trump doesn't know what to do with an active listener with a dazzling smile. That's it.
I mean, it's incredible. He just gave him a picture to hold. Like, yeah. it's the simplest thing. It's like dealing with like a child. Just like
it is the Make-A-Wish presidency, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, it's just like you get a ballroom and you're gonna throw you a big party. And FIFA got you an award. Like, I am like I think we're like 3 months away from having John Cena visit him, like to give him something. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know. John Cena visits a lot of kids who are dying.
In case you didn't know.
Speaking of FIFA, I want to talk about the street design changes that are happening in advance of the World Cup. So Mamdani's DOT has been on a tear the past 2 weeks announcing upcoming street design changes that will give more space to pedestrians, cyclists, and transit riders. Ninth Avenue is getting a new bus, a wider bike lane, and an expanded sidewalk. Lafayette is getting pedestrian improvements and a new two-way bike lane, finally making it safe to bike from Union Square to the Brooklyn Bridge. The DOT is installing these new projects immediately, citing this summer's World Cup as the reason why they need to move quickly. Is this just a convenient excuse to get good shit done? Or will the World Cup tourists be cycling on Lafayette when not watching soccer in New Jersey?
I mean, I do think legitimately drivers need this much overtime to get all of their tantruming out before the World Cup arrives. It's like they need to go through the five stages of grief and then finally arrive at like, yeah, you know what, I will go around or whatever.
I still think, even if this is all, you know, not going to necessarily impact the world, or however it's going to impact it, the thought of Europeans trying to get from the city to MetLife Stadium, like, that is not going to go, there's no amount of work they can do that's going to have that go smoothly. Like, they can't, they're not going to be able to fathom it.
What you got to do is take the Port Authority bus to American Dream Mall. Then you're going to walk through Court A to Court B to find the Sky Bridge to take you to the parking lot of MetLife Stadium. Then you're going to walk for 15 minutes past parked cars and get to your football match. Sorry.
It is pretty, I mean, I don't watch sports games because I am, I don't know, I'm a weird person. But I have taken it out there for concerts. It's very complicated. And then on the way back, it's like, oh, this bus isn't running now and you got to take this. And it's very hard. You're right. I think it's going to be, someone should go out there and capture the Europeans and their element trying to figure it out.
Well, I, for one, I'm very happy that they're using this as an excuse. I personally think it probably is an excuse. They just want to get this stuff done. I mean, these are street design changes that are going to change the city for generations. So who cares about the World Cup in July?
I will say, if you want to make changes in New York, what you have to do is pedestrianize Steinway Avenue. Because I don't know if anyone has been on Steinway when Columbia plays or when Greece plays. It is fucking loco. Like, it is like just waves and waves of like people who look like me in yellow jerseys just completely paralyzing traffic. And so if you want to do something for the World Cup, because they can't afford to go to the games, they're so expensive. No one can afford to go to these games. Yeah. Yeah. I'm right. I'm so brave. I'm so brave.
That's why I don't go, because I can't afford it.
Well, there's a great precedent for all this, which is the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo. She completely changed Paris. She got rid of a ton of street parking. She made all these pedestrianized streets in front of schools, tons of new bike lanes everywhere, and she did it because the Olympics was coming. That was her excuse. We got to do this for the Olympics. Got to do this for the Olympics. And then she won re-election, and then just last week, her successor, the guy that she was supporting, won, and he took bike share to his party. And like his whole campaign, they were all biking the equivalent of Paris City Bike through the streets. So I think what's amazing is like maybe she couldn't have got that stuff done without the Olympics excuse, but she got it done, and then people liked it, and it became popular, and now it's there forever. So
Mamdani took a city bike home last night, didn't he?
He did. Yes, Mamdani. He put on Blue Sky today that he took. It was a great night for a city bike ride, and he put his city bike screenshot where he'd gone from like Red Hook back to Gracie Mansion, 47 minutes. It was pretty
beautiful
impressive.
Night for it.
Yeah.
All right. Flags. This next question I'm not excited to ask, but I'm going to because I have a fear of rodents. Okay, this was listed in the city recently. Newly elected council member Harvey Epstein recently introduced a bill to outlaw the sale of glue traps aimed at mice and rats in the city. Animal rights advocates argue that the traps are inhumane and they cause a slow death for trapped rodents and can be unsafe for pets and children. Epstein argues that the city should implement less violent methods to keep the rats at bay, such as trash containerization, sure, and sealing holes. He also said, I think we'll reduce the rat population, but then we'll just coexist with them, like we coexist with other wildlife. What do we think about the pro-rodent stance of the council member?
I know SNL did it, but it's so rough to have that name. It's
Harvey Epstein.
It's so rough. Yes. I can't imagine this man's life.
I hope this doesn't get taken out of context, but I support Epstein. I think, yeah.
I would take the opposite approach. I think the city needs to become one big glue trap. I think that would knock it out as fast as possible.
I walked home last night. I was at a very late contentious council meeting that I was at, and I just wanted to get home. I was so tired. I was so hungry, and a fucking rat just ran right out in front of me, ruined my whole night. I was just like, my blood pressure was up. Man, I would have given anything. I would have thrown a glue trap at that fucking thing.
I have a hot take, which is that I don't mind them, and I think it's because my first language is Spanish, okay. And rats are female in Spanish, and I found that out recently. It's la rata, like the, you know, old las ratas, and so I. But mice are men, and I don't like mice, but I like rats, and I am straight. So I do think there might be something. I discovered that recently in my subconscious. Okay. I was like, do I like rats because they're female?
So next time I see a rat on the street, I'll give you a call and come get him.
Support women. Support women.
You have to say, excuse me, ma'am. Yeah.
No, take this out of context. I don't support women. Rats.
I get that it sucks for the mice. Like, we had a glue trap behind our stove, and then we had, like, a problem with our stove, and a repairman came and moved the glue trap, and there was a mouse that was on the glue trap. And I don't know how long he suffered starvation on that glue trap, but I'm very glad that he was dead.
We would have heard him scream.
Maybe. I don't
Come
know.
On. No. It wasn't starvation. He probably died of thirst long before that.
I support animals. I really do. I just cannot have them in my house. I cannot have that in my house.
I just don't understand why we can't just hire, like, a man who plays a flute, you know, to trick all the rats into leaving.
Sam, are you volunteering?
I mean, maybe. If I could play, like, the recorder or whatever.
That is what I thought the rat czar was going to be.
Right.
It was a really disappointing job, I thought.
Like, with the feather?
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk about tourist trash on the Brooklyn Bridge. Andrew, if we could have photo number two. Tourists are tying trash, including tampons, condoms, and panties, to the chain link fence on the Brooklyn Bridge pedestrian path in a lower rent version of the trend of locking padlocks or love locks to a bridge. Brooklyn Heights resident Ellen Baum has started cleaning up the trash personally. She told the New York Post that she's met with detractors who say the trash wall is a symbol of global art. On a recent Monday, with the help of a volunteer group of trash collectors, Baum ripped off nearly 13 pounds of tissues, hair ties, receipts, and Band-Aids from the Brooklyn Bridge. The cleaning job is supposed to be the responsibility of the Department of Transportation, but they were perhaps busy with other things, I don't know. Would anyone defend this trash wall as art? Is there anything charming about the trash wall?
Are the tampons used?
Let's hope not.
I don't want any tourists to ever say that New York's dirty again. If they're doing this, fuck them. This is nasty as hell. Also, did the German tourists go do this after the tacos?
The only thing that can soothe my tongue is like putting toilet paper on the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, I wouldn't say it's stunning art. I would say that it's okay that the DOT is dealing with literally anything that crosses the transom before they deal with this. Like, this is not really a problem, I have to say. Just don't look at it, to be honest.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's art. Maybe I'm dumb, but it just looks like trash to me.
Yeah, I mean, my take on it is that I don't like love locks either, and it's, you know, there's stories of, like, bridges, like, you know, having structural damage because there's so many locks put on them in Amsterdam.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, and I think European...
They outlawed them in some bridges because of that, because they can, like, there's too much weight.
Maybe it's safer to put a feather light tampon. What about that? Harm reduction.
That feels like a John Oliver episode, honestly. Like, every week it's like... And this is true. Locks are actually destroying all our bridges. And it's like, oh, God. I love John Oliver. My wife works for John Oliver. But it is a little bit.
You're kind of the impression king. I'm impressed by that.
You're going to do every European accent before the show.
Oh, yeah. I have to. I have, you know, I look like this. I have to pretend to be a European tourist every time I come into the country.
All right. We have a couple of composting topics, speaking of trash. The first one is human composting. Starting in 2027, human composting will be allowed in Greenwood Cemetery. Reading from Gothamist, the form of human composting, or terramation, is a fossil-free process that converts corpses into dirt. An embalmed body is enclosed in a high-tech casket, which controls humidity and ventilation and also rocks back and forth to accelerate decomposition. Organic materials such as clover, wood chips, straw, and alfalfa are added to the casket. After 40 days, the whole pile turns into a 200-gallon batch of fertile soil. The process is expected to cost between $5,000 and $7,000, far cheaper than the $21,000 for a grave site. A typical cremation releases 534 pounds of greenhouse gas into the atmosphere. Would anybody on the panel choose human composting when they go?
Yeah. Yes.
This show counts as your living will.
Yeah. No. I know. My wife got really mad at me once because I told her that when I die I wanted to be eaten by something, which is apparently illegal. but you know, in Tibet they have sky funerals. Do you know about this?
Where
they
like,
so they can't. Birds. It's so high up that they can't dig in the ground because it's too hard and rocky, and there aren't trees to burn bodies. So what they do is they like chop a body up and leave it out, and birds come and eat it, and that's how they dispose of dead bodies. And I was like, that's what I want to do. But apparently that's illegal. So I mean, you can't just like bring a dead body to Tibet.
Have you seen Weekend at Bernie's?
Yeah.
It's a documentary.
I would do that. I would totally do this. This sounds great.
Katie?
I was kind of on board until you said the thing about rocking in the coffin, which I think sounds really undignified and embarrassing. So beyond the grave, I'd be like, don't jostle me around, you know.
You just want to be still like a vampire with your arms crossed?
Keep me still and put that alfalfa on me or whatever, you know. But
I think there needs to be some movement to, you know, speed the process along.
Turn me over.
Yeah.
There's probably a
get all the gases out. No, see, this is sounding horrible.
I bet there's a premium option where you don't have to rock. It just takes longer, so you got to pay more.
Or they just kind of vibrate me. Like, there are cooler motions, I guess, you know.
Yeah, there's a guy who every once in a while.
Yeah. Flip me over. Yeah.
See, that's jobs. That's jobs for people in the city.
Whoa. Yeah. AI can't take that.
All right. Composting topic number two.
Wait, Charlie, do you want to be composted? I need to know.
I'm into it. I'm into it. Yeah.
This is my preferred way. I want to die that way.
The green.
I do, seriously.
You want to die that way.
I want to die. I want to crawl into the coffin fully alive.
Buried alive.
And let's start tomorrow.
You want to be jostled to death.
Yeah. Just have my kids come and shake that coffin. They'll love it.
Help mommy.
Oh, God. This show is taking a turn.
All right. The Parks Department has announced a $37.5 million project to renovate the area of Prospect Park known as the Vale of Kashmir. maybe the coolest name for any part of the park. Among other improvements, they will build a pavilion that will include 8 composting bathrooms. The restrooms don't hook up to a sewer system and instead rely on natural bacteria to break down human waste into a soil-like material. Any predictions on how this is going to go in Prospect Park?
People are going to perv out in there. I know it. There is, like, I have to say 2 months maximum before they find someone swimming. I think, you know.
You definitely lost me at not connected to a plumbing system.
Yeah, it's called a porta potty, right? Isn't that just a porta potty?
Where they find people in the poop.
But a porta potty, like a truck comes
Wait,
with
really?
A...
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
What?
Oh, in the composting toilet. Oh, okay. I thought you meant in a porta potty.
What is dry? What is dry? When you go to the bathroom, which one is supposed to
liquid
be dry?
Liquid and solid, I think. Yeah. I think it's more of a liquid and solid
That's
situation.
Number three. Yeah.
Number three is just dust.
Number three is dust. Yeah.
When you get to a certain age.
Yes, yeah, Sam, what's going on with you? You don't have dry.
Dry. I don't have any dries. Can I be, when I die, can I be put in the composting toilet?
Sure. Toss it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might go faster. I don't know.
I mean, I think a porta potty, a truck comes with a forklift and they remove it and they take it somewhere. I mean, this is just going to be in the ground in the park. It just becomes part of the earth.
Yeah, but you've seen the permanent porta potties that just sit there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's like an outhouse. That
can't smell worse than any park public bathroom I've been in New York. So.
I will say Central Park bathrooms are really nice. They actually are.
Which ones? Because the uptown ones are not.
The one by the Ramble, they're really nice. Yeah.
The Boathouse.
The Boathouse ones, yeah, they're really nice. Bethesda Terrace has a nice bathroom.
Right, the ones by the south of the park.
If you want a list, I will take you on my tour of the Central Park bathrooms.
Yeah, Tavern on the Green has real nice bathrooms too, I'm sure.
All right, next topic, childcare costs. The New York Times profiled a family of 3 living on the Upper West Side and making $500,000 a year. And talked about how they can afford New York City was the headline. The couple spends $3,900 a month on rent and $4,200 a month on daycare for their 1-year-old son. Now, they are able to save $10,000 a month towards buying an apartment one day with their $500,000 a year combined income. Question, would you ever let the New York Times do a profile on your family budget?
No, I don't even want to know how much I spend on my dog. I worry that it's above $4,200 a month.
It just seems like there's never one of these New York Times articles that doesn't get roasted or set everybody off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is no net positive from doing this. Like, you're just going to come off as, like, a rich asshole. And also, I read the article. They're like, we want to have 2 bathrooms and 2 bedrooms. Like, don't live in the Upper West Side then. Like,
They live right next to Central Park.
Yeah,
Or don't save $10,000. That's a lot of money that they're saving. I mean, look, saving is good. I am not an economist, so don't take my advice. But I think you could probably make it work on $500,000 combined income. I would think. No?
I would maybe do the peek under the hood because then I could find out how much money I'm spending.
I think it would be good. Maybe we could all try to get $500,000 each and see if we can survive on it. I'll do that for a year if anyone wants to sponsor that. I'll keep you all updated with all the stuff I'm buying at Whole Foods.
Yeah, $10,000 a month on sumo oranges. Yeah.
Oh, I love a sumo orange. And $50,000 on walnuts, apparently. Just buy a giant pile of walnuts. All right, speaking of money, there's been a string of coat jackings. NYPD and school officials are warning about risks associated with wearing luxury winter coats, singling out the Moose Knuckles brand, which costs $1,600 and has been the center of several winter robberies, including knife point and machete stick-ups. What? Is $1,600 coat worth it?
It's probably really warm.
I've never had one, so I don't know. But I like the machete element of it. It's kind of cool.
Anybody in this room ever worn a moose knuckle coat? Anyone? No.
Is it made of moose knuckles?
I think that's a.
Isn't moose knuckle a?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like it's like it's like a.
It's a camel toe, but dude.
Yeah, it's a male camel toe, right?
A moose knuckle is a male camel toe?
Yeah. Like
when you see your.
penis and scrotum through the jeans?
Like a lot, like if you watch the Olympics, a lot of times like the spandex and like or like a wrestling, like a singlet will like, because it sort of splits the business. Do you have a pen and paper?
So, can we bring a chalkboard out? Thank you.
So this luxury coat brand is named after male camel toe.
This is taking a turn. I wonder how much a camel toe coat would cost. I think it's very funny. I see, you know, I was walking through the Upper East Side recently, and the rings on women, I'm like astounded at the giantness of a ring. I would be so scared to wear a ring that big around. But I guess they're not taking the subway or, right?
They're harder to take off than a coat. I don't know. That's a process. I guess, yeah, you have to use a knife or a machete to get somebody's coat. So I guess you get their ring too.
I mean, I just get scared to having it. I like to shop at Target. So that's the level of moose knuckling I'm doing, but they do not sell the moose knuckle brand there. I'm just shocked. It just like it also just seems ostentatious to walk around. People in New York are all mixed income levels. It feels very weird to me to be like, and here's my symbol of expensiveness. I don't know.
Also, where do you buy a machete? Are those? Can you just buy a machete anywhere? Is that? Where do people get those?
Hardware store.
Really? They sell machetes?
It's like a gardening thing.
What do you
garden? Am I being crazy? I don't know.
No, I think you're right. No, you're absolutely right.
Okay, thank you.
You can garden with the machete?
Yeah, like a really hard plant.
All right. Clearly, you guys are the white people in the panel.
Excuse me.
It's not a bad thing, but like...
All right, one more robbery topic. There's been a spate of athleisure robberies at Lululemon stores in Manhattan and Williamsburg. According to the New York Times, the location on North 6th and Bedford Avenue in Williamsburg was robbed on March 3rd, and thieves made off with $21,000 in expensive, soft, stretchy clothes.
So what is that, one pair of pants?
Am I right?
So do you want to take a guess? How many pairs of Lululemon yoga pants is $21,000? Anybody can shout out a number.
Well, it's like, how many could they have in the store? They're not going to have 2,000.
What was
pants.
That? 164. Yeah. Wow. We crowdsourced it between 100 and 200 from the audience. 164.
Leggings were famously on sale at Old Navy yesterday for $9.99.
I will say, Lululemon boxers, so soft.
I know, don't ask where I was on March 3rd. Well, at retail stores, I've heard this from friends in the past who've worked retail. It's like they're not allowed to stop you, right? They're not getting paid enough, and their managers tell them, like, don't stop anyone who's stealing. So I don't know. I don't know what everyone's doing after the show.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't know if somebody has a gun or a knife. You certainly don't.
Or a machete. You never know.
Yeah.
Well, you know what the Target policy that they have, or, like, they videotape people stealing, but they wait, because a lot of times those people will come back.
Is that real?
This is what I heard, and that they wait until that person has stolen enough merchandise that's like over a certain amount of money, so they can charge them with a more serious crime.
Oh. I feel like if I was Target HQ, I would be sparing no expense to spread that story.
Yeah, totally.
I'm extremely curious, because I have heard that
as
well. I was like, they sent it to the FBI.
I saw last year when I was with my kids home, I saw a guy running with two cases of Bud Light.
Hell,
the police were running after him so fast. And I've never really seen the police run after anyone, but boy, they were getting that. I was like, wow, I think somebody was punched in the face down the street and you weren't running after them, but they got that guy with the Bud Light.
I love that there's a division of the FBI in this universe that, like, it's like, that's what the new X-Files is going to be about. It's like, Mulder, this guy took too many Fiji Old Navy deodorants.
They're solving a string of murders. It's like, drop it, the Target CEO called. Yeah.
I want to talk about dog poop. Dog poop has been back in the news, guys. It has. New Yorkers have been reacting to seeing shit all over in the piles of snow, and Gotham has interviewed a sanitation enforcement official who said the chances of someone not picking up after their dog while an enforcement officer is watching is very, very slim. So slim that we issued just 2 summonses for failure to remove canine waste in 2025. Was there more poop this winter, or did it just seem easier to spot? And either way, can we fix this? What can we do to fix the dog poop? Throw it out. Yes, we have an audience suggestion of throwing it out.
We have to, a dog owner's responsibility. You must constipate your dogs.
Yeah, I'm hearing, I'm also hearing shame. Shame your neighbors. But I will say, I don't see a lot of people not picking up after their dogs. I just see the shit on the ground. It's like they're doing it very subtly, these people.
It's one dog.
We need to find that dog, and the investigation
and
starts
make him
now.
President.
Yeah, I guess people, I think when they think they're being unobserved, it's like that's when they do it, right? Is when they think, so you need to constantly remind, maybe posters that say like someone's watching, you know?
Yeah.
We need a surveillance state, an even worse surveillance state than we have now.
Yeah.
Specifically for this.
I do genuinely think, like, of what Cody was saying, like, I do wonder if because of the pileup of snow, the walkways got so much more narrow that, like, it was like, oh, yeah, it's fucking everywhere. I don't know. There was one particular stretch, like, two blocks from my apartment in Harlem where, like, it was between 141st Street and, like, 140th Street. It was just poop. I don't know why. But it was just that street. And the rest of it was fine.
Yeah, I think there's like a social contagion thing too, where if you see shit on the ground and you're like, well, why am I the sucker that's, you know, I forgot my green bag, I'm running to go try to find a newspaper around the corner. Like, I'll just, if somebody else is doing it, I'll do it too.
Also, not to be in the pocket of big dog shit, but at least dogs must poop. It's like no one made you go to 7-Eleven, like pick up your soda can. Like, you know what I mean? It's like there's so much trash on the ground as well. That actually is more offensive to me. I would say it's like you just go to the, you know, at least you don't have to touch poop to like deal with your McDonald's bag. So,
but
like,
I also
you should still pick up poop.
I don't see people litter. I mean, I
oh
see.
Oh my god!
I see people litter
all the time.
Really? Yeah. It's so interesting because, like, you know, we live in Hell's Kitchen, and so it's not that it's
we have plenty of litter.
We have plenty of litter. Yeah. I am not saying that we don't, but I don't generally see people throw it. I just wake up and there's like shit everywhere.
Cigarette butts. You see that?
Oh, tons of that.
That yes. doesn't count.
I saw a guy toss a cigarette butt near a trash can once. He just like tossed it at the foot of the trash can. And I was like, dude, like a little higher.
Yeah. And but like, you know, in the 50s, like people used to throw, before the Keep America Beautiful campaign, they used to just throw trash out. They just didn't understand the concept of like non-reusable stuff or whatever. And they would just throw it everywhere, and they had to do a whole campaign saying, you can't do this, it's bad. And then everyone was like, oh, and I think they need to do that with cigarette butts. I think that guy probably thought, I can't put it in the trash can, it'll start it on fire, it belongs on the ground.
Yeah, he thought he was helping.
I think so.
But in Europe.
You go to other cities in Europe or in like Montreal, they have like designated, you know, cigarette containers.
Yeah.
So that does make it a lot easier because everyone is not going to be super careful. I also will say, when I see littering, it is out of a car.
Yeah. People really?
Drive by because you're driving away. You just toss it out.
All right, let's talk about cars. Mamdani is
there's your in, Charlie.
The Mamdani administration has not said they're not going to charge for street parking. So our winter snow this year has drawn attention to the vehicles stored in our shared curbs that never move. We have a car in front of our house that was there, in front of our apartment building, that was there for the first snowstorm and is still there, mm-hmm. has not moved. And the regulation is no parking. And it's been there for that long. We live near a police precinct where rules don't matter. So New York City is toying with the idea of charging to use any of the 3 million free parking spaces we have on city streets. Manhattan Borough President Brad Hoylman-Siegel said it could help residents find spaces and raise money at the same time. Hoylman-Siegel said over $1 billion worth of revenue could be generated, but this isn't about nickeling diming Manhattanites, but giving them a consistent place to park their cars. Should New Yorkers have a consistent place to park their cars? Power Joker, we'll start with you.
Well, yeah, our show on April 11th is about parking, so come check us out. But yeah, I think that it's similar to the congestion pricing idea, which is like, oh, this is a way of generating money for the city that we're not doing that could be like billions of dollars. I mean, you're hearing about like the budget shortfalls and stuff that are happening right now as Mamdani's trying to do the budget. And it's like, here is like all this money that people would pay and it would open up parking. Like, I do think in general it would probably be a net positive for the city, but people are going to be probably very resistant to it, and I'm sure the permitting process will not be smooth also.
Yeah. An unsmooth permitting process? I know, right? It can't be. Yeah, I don't believe you.
I worry a little. So I'm worried about residential parking permits because it gives people an entitlement to the curb.
Yes.
Like right now, I mean, I'm for metering as many spaces as possible and taking away as many free parking spaces as possible to have things like bike lanes and expanded sidewalks and parklets and bioswales and all the other things we could do than someone storing their red sedan in front of our building for going on 70 days without moving it. But if I think the moment somebody gets a residential parking permit, then it's harder to take it away from them. They feel like because they paid a lot of other cities, it's like $300 for the year and you get to park. But a garage is $600 a month. So I think we need to have demand-based pricing for the curb would be my take.
Well, there has been talk about the metered parking as well. New York City has more than 12,000 miles of curb and currently 3 million street parking spaces along it, but just 80,000 of those are metered. That's fewer than 2.5%. And the think tank Urban Future said in a new report, the number of metered spots should be increased by at least 25% to achieve financial and congestion goals. So yeah, do you guys think we should meter more curbed parking spots?
We gotta do something with all these quarters.
That's true, yeah. Or pennies. We should just take all of the dead pennies.
No more gum.
Yeah.
Just parking.
Yeah, that's true. Shove a cigarette butt in there.
Sam, you want to tell us a little about the history of street parking? Because I know in the 1950s, you couldn't park overnight, right? And was Robert Moses to blame for street parking?
Probably. That sounds like him. He sure did love the car. I'm sure, I mean, most car-related issues in the city are directly his fault. I know that for sure. So yes, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this idea came across his desk of charging people to park, and he said, no way, because he loved, you know, giving people who had cars an elite status, like you're saying. And I think that a parking permit, like you also said, would do that as well. It would just give people the opportunity to say, like, only people who live here can park here. Like, I'm sorry, you know, which I'm sure people would love as well.
I think that's true, and I think it would be also that's easier to call 911 if someone's in your space.
Right, yeah.
And that is, I'm serious, people will absolutely do that.
Yeah. One more issue about our shared curb. So if we get a photo number 3 up, Andrew. Last month, Manhattan Community Board 4 heard from residents whose apartment windows face this food truck. The truck was open 24 hours a day and had been parked in the space for years, despite the parking regulations being 3-hour metered parking. And food trucks are required to visit a commissary once a day to clean their equipment, so somewhere off-site. But this truck literally didn't move for years. Residents couldn't open their windows due to smoke and smells, and they needed blackout curtains due to the bright LED lights. Now, I'm saying all this in the past tense because after Community Board 4 wrote a letter, the NYPD towed the food truck. In the meantime, Mamdani appointed a new czar in charge of street vendors and said in a statement, our street vendors are not a problem to solve. They are a community to support. And the mayor wants to make more licenses available to drive down the cost of street vending licenses being resold on the black market, which he says leads to halalflation.
There's that improv training.
Yeah. You heard it there first.
So what do we think about food trucks? Should food trucks be able to permanently set up camp wherever they please? Is there a place for food trucks?
Like, obviously, no. Obviously, what this truck was doing is bad. But, don't you guys kind of want to go for halal right now? Like, I mean, it looks pretty good. I think like halal trucks and generally our food vendors are not bad. I think the lady selling churros in the subway is not a violent criminal. I think obviously it's a case by case basis, and this is an insane case of a clearly insane person or one person who was like, where the fuck did I park my halal truck? And he's just like,
how do you think the burger is from this halal truck? You got a picture of it.
I'll try it. Looks good.
It is this case of like, you fucking ruin this shit for everybody, man.
Yeah.
Like, I love a food truck, but come on, man, you're never gonna leave, and you're just like, cool, I'm there. Like, because in order to not lose the space, they stay there the
consistently. You can never clean up trash underneath of it. The lights were insanely bright. This is near Columbus Circle, like blindingly bright, you know, obviously because they want to draw people to the truck. So it's just frustrating. It's like, can we not have nice things? Like, yes, we like food trucks. Can you pop in and do a little thing and then leave? Like, nobody would complain. That's what's great about New York. But it's like, you got to fucking ruin everything by doing it too much. That's my take.
It's, well, I mean, this is 58th Street. It's a high traffic corridor. People get off the ACE train, 1-2 train, and they walk to the hospital, Mount Sinai, and it's just, they've got constant foot traffic. It's a great spot for a food truck, but it's also a great spot for a restaurant, and there are multiple restaurants across the street that pay property tax.
That are paying rent.
You're paying rent, paying property tax, and all that. So yeah, it doesn't seem fair that you could just take a space next to a fire hydrant for 4 years, which is what happened. And my other pet peeve about food trucks is that they all have these gas generators that you can see poking out of the side of this one. They're really loud, and it's just like toxic fumes being spewed into the air.
That's what makes it taste good. That's what makes it so good.
It flavors the meat. Yeah.
I walked by one yesterday on the Upper West Side, and it was just a little gas can just fully on fire. And the guy was trying to put it out with sparkling water. He had like opened up a sparkling water and was just like fully fine. And I was like, there's a big fire there, dude. He's just sprinkling his little sparkling water on it. I didn't stick around to find out if it worked. Does anyone know sparkling water puts out fire?
No? Carbon dioxide makes it much faster. Yeah.
It explodes. Well, good thing I left, and I didn't hear about it in Gothamist, so I guess it was fine.
All right. I want to talk about a particular license plate, if we could have photo number 4 up, Andrew. Governor Kathy Hochul intervened when the DMV told a Long Island granddad he could no longer use the vanity plate he'd been using for 5 years. As a recent review found, the message to be too inappropriate for street use. The plates in question read, "Pee before we go." Hochul personally called the man to say she found it hilarious and supported the message. What does the panel think? Was the governor right to intervene and save this vanity license plate?
My dumbass was like, peanut butter for Wego?
Yes.
But now I get it. No, this is fine. I don't read this and go like, oh, now I have to think about piss or whatever. And look, it has a little waterfall in it too. That's, come on. How old is this man? Did he just say granddad?
So, yeah.
He's a granddad. If you've had children, this is the number one thing that you say. You're like, did you pee? You have to go. Make sure you pee before you go. So it's funny that he's a granddad. It makes sense.
I actually think this is what the governor should spend most of his time doing. I think actually every joke license plate needs her attention. It should be this and watching Rambo, her favorite movie. And I am calling on her to review my 80085 submission.
Hell yeah.
For New York State. You know.
That's a boobs license plate?
Yeah.
Just every... Every morning, just a huge stack of papers gets like slammed on her desk.
Kath, get in here.
Yeah, she's
like, this actually sees something like more Trumpy, right? This is something Trump would do. He'd be like, bring me all the vanity plates. I think actually maybe we would get out of war if we sent this pile of vanity plates over to Trump and he could just go through them every day.
If they said Trump on him, he'd be a lot more excited.
That's true. The key. That's true. He has no sense of humor though, so this wouldn't fly.
Oh no, he's unpopular opinion, the man is funny. The man is funny. He says funny things and publicly humiliates his goons in a way that's like, yeah, he fucking hates them. It's pretty funny.
Making people wear shoes that are too big.
That's a great bit. That's amazing.
That's funny. That's a funny thing to do.
Saying Kristen Stewart cheated on Robert Pattinson like a
yes.
dog.
Oh
that's like awesome. Dog. I think about that all the time.
Getting into a Tesla and saying, outside of the White House, and saying, wow, everything is computer. Not computers. Computer singular is so funny.
If he had just become a conservative talk show host, like, the you know.
Imagine him on The Traitors. Imagine him on The Traitors, guys.
Don't ruin that show for me. I love
it. Would have been great.
I don't want to think about Trump on
Well,
the
he
Traitors.
Wouldn't be president. It's another That's timeline.
True. I mean, we did get Michael Rappaport on The Traitors, which is pretty close to what true. He would have been
like. It would be a similar role.
I would love to see Trump in those little hats. Little hat outfit. What outfit is he going to wear today?
He's dressed up all fancy and stuff for the dinner.
He has to sit in the
with
catapult
a monocle.
Or whatever.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about digital hall passes. Gothamist reports that 167 New York City schools are using SmartPass. It's a system where students must sign out on an iPad by the classroom door before taking a bathroom break. The software allows any teacher to see all the students with an active pass, including where they are going and how long they have to get back to class. The company website advertises SmartPass as helping thwart hangouts in the bathroom, vaping, and vandalism. So creepy. A spokesperson for the New York Civil Liberties Union said it will inevitably turn a student's behavior into a long-term record that is exploitable, hackable, and can be used against the kids. Public records show the education department spent $368,000 on SmartPass contracts in 2025. Is this a good use of money?
Scam. Eric Adams era scam detected. Yeah. That was a bunch of the scams that Eric Adams cronies ran were contracts. Like,
yeah.
This is not a real thing. It's not needed. It's horrible for kids. You'll never stop teenagers from fucking off, you know, so don't even try. But yeah, I think it's a grift.
Did you have to indicate what number you were going on the iPad? Is that part
number,
of that?
Number three.
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 Full disclosure, they have this at our son's middle school.
Really?
Oh my God. We didn't know this until we were talking to him. At the dinner table, we talk about politics questions that we're going to bring up at our show. But we brought this up, and he was like, oh, yeah, we have that. And he walked us through, and he said they have 7 minutes to get back, and if they don't get back, there's a red light blinking. I was like, Jesus Lord.
It's like a fucking Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah, really? And I was like, well.
Fascism is here. This
it's
is disgusting.
It's so weird. And then, he said that there's one class where the bathroom is just too far. It's impossible to get back. He has to go, like, up the steps. And that teacher knows and doesn't care if it's blinking red, so I was like, this is so weird. Yeah,
if you sit in the toilet for more than 7 minutes, the spikes come out.
Did your schools have hall? My school didn't have hall passes when I was in high school or middle school. I don't. Because, yeah, this is so weird.
You're just walking around.
Yeah, I really was. I was spinning my, it was 8 minutes, 9 minutes. I was walking around.
Wait, were you homeschooled, Sam?
Yes, I was. I was homeschooled. Yeah.
Your mom just let you go whenever you want. Yeah.
Teacher no mom was really cool.
Yeah, she was great. Yeah.
The Gothamist article about this quoted someone saying that some kids will sign out the wrong person's name, and then when you try to go to the bathroom, you can't because your name has already been signed out.
Hell yeah.
And then Charlie told our son that like an idiot, and our son goes, what? I was like, oh, shit. Now our kid's going to do it, and we're going to get in trouble. Damn it.
All right, I want to talk about the pigeon sculpture. If we could have photo number 5, Andrew. After 18 months, the High Line is saying goodbye to the sculpture Dinosaur, the 21-foot-tall aluminum pigeon overlooking 10th Avenue by Colombian artist Ivan Argote. A petition, do you know?
Ivan Argote.
Yeah, sorry. Ivan Argote.
He did another accent.
his native accent. Yeah. A petition making for it to be permanent already has 5,000 signatures, but the pigeon is moving away to make way for the next sculpture, a 27-foot-tall Buddha work of art by another artist. It is nice to have rotating art at a venue like this, but that pigeon was so instantly iconic. Doesn't it deserve to stay there forever? What do you guys think?
Keep the pigeon. I love the pigeon. He's Colombian. I am going to be biased. I was going to boo, but then you said it was a Buddha, and then I stopped myself. Yeah. When you were like, it's set to be replaced with, I was ready. I was just like, boo.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the restraint.
Yeah, it's tough to be against Buddhism. kind of a devil's choice here. Can you put them both on there? Put the pigeon on the Buddha?
Yeah, they can be friends.
I think
the Buddha would be on the pigeon.
Sure. I mean, the Buddha loves
I think it would be the other way around. It's still up, by the way. I walked by it this morning.
Could we put him somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, it is such a uniquely great spot. I mean, if you're walking or biking up 10th Avenue and you see it from a distance, it's so amazing. And the Buddha will look cool, too. But
sincerely, I think the Pigeon is, like, so tied to New York. Like, can't we just put it somewhere else? Like, it won't be in that, like, really cool place, but you can put
There's
it.
There's a spot that opened up on 58th Street where a food truck used to be. plop it down there.
Can you imagine if you're in that building and you wake up one morning and you're just eye level with a giant fucking pigeon?
They're like, don't worry, we fixed it. We fixed the food truck then. Problem solved.
It somehow also
changed. I'm in the shower and it's looking at me.
It somehow also has the gas generator on
and the lights and shit. Yeah, it's all
All right, we're gonna wrap it up with a couple more things here. I want to talk about the vertical hot dog. If we could have photo 7, Andrew. Two Ukrainian twin brothers have brought a beloved Ukrainian dish to Brighton Beach. After driving across the United States for construction work, the brothers realized something was missing from American gas station fare: good quality vertical hot dogs. One of the brothers explained to the Brooklyn paper, in Ukraine, they are at every gas station. It's a snack for you and the whole family. What does the panel think of the vertical hot dog?
It's just like, not to be a fucking bitch, but like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, any hot dog can become vertical, you know? Just turn it.
Yeah, fuck you, Ukrainians.
My bad, you know, but it's all like, do your thing, but don't act like it's revolutionary.
Yeah, seems like it's a hot dog kind of in like a pita pocket. Like, I don't think the hot dog comes out the bottom. Like, it's a fully enclosed cylinder with the hot dog in it.
Just squeeze the bread. Like, it's not, you know, again, it's not.
There should just be a better name for it than vertical hot dog.
Right. It's a marketing problem.
Yeah. I take issue with them saying that there is something missing from American gas stations. As an immigrant, there isn't. You guys have everything you need in there. They got like...
Also, one thing that's definitely not missing from gas stations is hot dogs. Like, they're there. They're just horizontal, I guess.
I've never been like, I wish there were more hot dog options at this gas station where I'm certainly going to order a hot dog and eat it.
It's, like, it's so hard to handle like this. There's got to be a better way.
It does feel like a telemarketing thing.
All right, I want to end with a few hot take questions. So Katie's publication, Hellgate, they do a March Madness for hot takes, for Ooh, takes every
good.
March.
I was supposed to mention that, so I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm mentioning it for you.
So thank you.
It's really fun, and they talk about it on their podcast, which you should listen to. But I just picked out a few of my favorite hot takes from their list, and I want to see what the panel thinks about them. The first is, the word transplant should become literally unspeakable, magically replaced on your tongue by fellow New Yorker.
I'm a transplant, so yes, I agree. I wasn't born here.
I think you're an immigrant. I think Cody from Ohio Whoa. Is a transplant, right?
I've been here since
Wow, labeling. Oh. We're just like, cool.
Yeah, like, wow. I've lived in New York longer than I've lived anywhere else, so I don't understand. But I wasn't born here, so I don't.
None of us are native New Yorkers,
yeah,
right?
So yeah, I don't understand how that works.
How many people in the audience are native New Yorkers?
Got a few.
Two.
Got a few.
Yeah, so you're the minority.
Would you call all of us transplants?
No.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
okay. So you understood the impetus to leave there, as I did. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a horrible word. I mean, Eric Adams literally, like, at a speech when he was mayor, was like, go back to Iowa.
Wichita,
I was born in Iowa, so I was very offended.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I mean, there's obviously the E.B. White quote about how it's the people who move here and choose to stay and make their life in the city that make the city great.
Wow, E.B. White? Wow.
We started the show by quizzing people on council members, so I think we know what we're doing.
No, I think it's usually someone who drives a car who's screaming that I'm a transplant because I made a comment on Instagram supporting a bike lane.
And you've been here, you moved here right before 9/11, and you stayed. So I think you are a New Yorker.
Right. Suspicious time to move here.
Don't ask more details, Sam. All right, hot take number two. All NYPD vehicles should be replaced with smart cars, no matter the cost.
This was mine, and it's right.
Cops are going to love that.
I think they'll look silly in them, so yeah, I like it.
Especially if you cram like 20 of them into one, you know?
It won't be so bad when they park on every fucking sidewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give them a pile of hot dogs and they'll be fine. Vertical hot dog it?
Honestly, want to see a smart car better than the normal size cop car, but I want to see more cops on bikes. I don't know. I mean, it's so much more efficient. Like, we've like, there's been like an issue where there was a maniac at a playground during a kid's birthday, and we called 911 because this guy was like twirling a belt around and threatening five-year-olds at a five-year-old birthday. So we called 911. The police precinct is like six blocks away, and they showed up like 20 minutes later in two SUVs. It's like, guys, you could have walked, right? Yeah. Or you could have biked down the Ninth Avenue bike lane in 45 seconds. So.
They could have walked in 6 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Final take, it is an unwritten law that you should have to hold the subway door open for anyone running for the train, and you should not have to hear the words, hold the door, to do so. Do we agree with holding the door for strangers?
I do it, so yeah, I don't know. Maybe
transplant.
I'm, yeah. Yell immigrant at me.
No.
I support holding the door, but I think you only, like, each train should do it once. Right?
Yes.
Like, you hold
yes.
the door, and then there's the next wave
yeah.
that's trying to get
okay.
on it.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because then you're holding the train up.
There has to be, I was going to say, maybe there's, like, a line on the ground in the subway stations where, like, you have to be at least that close to get the door held
yeah.
for you.
I like that. That's
or a timer.
Idea. Yeah.
Like, 40 seconds, maybe. 30 seconds is the most you can hold it.
I think we should normalize, like, pretending you don't see them and looking around. And then when the door closed, go, wow. Sorry. Wow. Like I do when I'm on the elevator pressing the button. I'm like, sorry, oops, I can't find the button.
There I can't believe that was an applause line. You
thank
got.
You, guys. But I think that was the hot take to end on because
yeah, audience of meanies.
I was right, and I am a New Yorker because that is my hot yeah. take.
All right, panelists, do you have anything that you would like to plug? We'll start with you first, Felipe.
I, as mentioned earlier, write for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. So after May 21st, if anyone has a job, that'd be awesome. No, buy my book, America Let Me In, and Choose Your Immigration Journey, not Choose Your Own Immigration Journey, because ChooseCo, which is a real company, is very litigious. But it's a comedy book about immigration. It's really fun.
Katie.
That's my plug.
Oh, subscribe to Hellgate so I can keep having dental insurance.
Power Joker is at Caveat. I play Robert Moses. It's a really fun show. April 11th. I think we're sold out, so May 23rd is the one after that. I also, this Saturday at the Magnet, I'm doing a show with my improv team, Metal Boy, Your Worst Idea, which is a lot of fun, 9 p.m.
Awesome. All right, well, let's give it up for our amazing panelists, Felipe Torres Medina, Katie Way, and Sam Rogal. Thank you guys, audience,
for being
vocal and shouting out answers with us and being here tonight. Come to our next show on April 23rd. Subscribe to our podcast. And please remember
to vote in midterm elections.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Everything's wrong with the universe. Accepting change is hard.